What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Moore. We're back with our Expert Corner interviews every Friday. We get to listen in on some conversations with short-term rental investors, navigating the good, the bad, the ugly, and willing to share all of that with you so you all walk into this game with your eyes wide open. Today, I've got Mason Laser joining me, and we're going to talk about a property in the Poconos area of Pennsylvania. But it is before we do that, Mason, first, thanks for joining me. Second, let's hear a little bit of backstory. What pays the bills? Where are you from? What got you kind of interested in investing? And then we'll dive into this deal.
Thanks, Sean. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on. I grew up in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, with me and the family and my now wife's family as well. So we all grew up there, and for the most part, everybody's still there. So we're constantly traveling back and forth from where we got a lot of ties to Pittsburgh. Grew up there, went to Penn State, and then found my way down to Baltimore and started working for a big general contractor in the commercial space. An out-of-town assignment up here in New Jersey ended up turning into a forever assignment. And a few years later, the client we were working for hired me, and I started, bought a house, moved in here, moved my then-girlfriend, now wife up there. We got married, started a family, and that was about 2015. So we've been here 11 years now, and got a good setup here. So that's
what part of Jersey?
I work for. We're in Northern Jersey, in Paramus, is where I work. So I got in with a retail developer, Westfield, and I've been at the Garden State Plaza here running all the development construction, since I've been here. So we just kicked off a $400 million development, turning one of our parking lots into a big mixed use, development. So putting up 575 apartment units and an acre town green and tying into the mall and new entrance renovations and things like that. So we've been working on this a long time, and it's finally come to fruition and broke ground earlier this year. So it's pretty exciting.
Awesome. So you got a little bit of background in some of the development stuff. So did you do any real estate investing in the past as you were bouncing around and getting all these different?
We did not directly, but growing up, I mean, I was very entrepreneurial. Always ran my own little landscaping business. Both my mom and dad both had small businesses. I worked with a neighbor for many years. We doing a small business, and just always kind of in the construction space and around houses, new properties, things like that. So always very interesting or interested in it, but never. Never pulled the trigger and got into my own investments. So, debated heavily going down the full entrepreneur route out of high school and ended up going to the college route and getting more of the career path job in the corporate world a little bit. Took that route. And so once we got a little bit older and had the family set up things slowed down in some regards and picked up in others. I really started looking ahead a few years and figuring out what I'm going to do, when I'm a bit older and how I'm going to set me and my family up. And that's really when I started getting interested and figuring out what my investment vehicle would be.
How did you navigate that decision? Like as you landed on short-term rentals, and were you navigating other asset classes at the time when you were kind of diving into like weighing the pros and cons?
It really started kind of before COVID a little bit, getting a little antsy at work. The corporate world can move a little slower than you'd like. If it was your own projects. And, so found it, thought about short-term rentals, thought about multifamily and just getting some sort of asset. So kind of navigating that, and ultimately ended up switching career paths and going to another contractor that was more of a family business, and did that for a few years. Then I got the opportunity to come back here to Westfield as an owner rep and a consultant. So I was able to start my own business and kind of come back here. And that was able to unlock more of my entrepreneurial spirit, and was able to kind of start setting myself up from tax situations and entity structures so I could really invest into something. So I navigated a few things. I was really ultimately kind of came between some industrial real estate investing here in New Jersey is big. Multifamily, obviously very big. And, you know, short-term rentals kind of always looked, started seeing things pop up on social media, you know, started absorbing some of your content, some of the others, and going through that. So, I mean, what it came down to for me, the other avenues were, maybe a little more local and straightforward, which I liked. But at the end of the day, they weren't fun, right? They weren't, you own a couple multifamilies around. It's not exciting. It's not, you know, your family doesn't really care, right? You're paying the bills. That's great. But, you know, it's not something you can really share with your family and your loved ones. So once I really started getting a lot of more of your content and thinking about lifestyle assets and setting my mind frame in that regard, it really kind of became an obvious choice to go down the short-term rental path.
Awesome. And then, you know, you mentioned where your roots were, which is the Pittsburgh area. And then obviously went to Penn State, you said. And so that, you know, where it became more of a lifestyle asset, talk to me about the process of location choice and kind of where you were navigating actually buying that first property.
Yeah. So it was 2024. I made the commitment that I was going to buy something by the end of the year. And that quickly, you know, became a short-term rental asset. And so I really wanted the first one to be geographically close. So I kind of drew a 2-hour radius from my house and wanted to stick within there. And I've got New York City on one side and Southern Jersey on the other. And so that really left kind of lower New York, the Hudson Valley and the Poconos over on the eastern side of Pennsylvania. And with us going back and forth to Pittsburgh all the time, it's not halfway. It's much closer to me, but it was kind of on the way. And I thought that could kind of be a bridge to, you know, family gatherings. And so kind of getting into my buy box was, you know, family, a place for family gatherings, something close enough to home that I can get to if I need to. I was planning on self-managing at the time or, you know, going to self-manage and just figuring out what would be the best area. So as we started learning and absorbing knowledge and content and things like that, the Poconos was kind of the clear winner just in that market. You know, it's a big market. It does really well. Some say it's saturated, maybe the case. But that was the pick for sure.
Yeah. Well, and there's a lot of sub markets within the Poconos. We talk about the Poconos, but as you know, there's multiple sub markets. Were you open to a lot of them, or did you guys like really dial into the sub market that you wanted to be in?
We were focused on some places we'd been. Mainly Lake Harmony was kind of the number one place I wanted to be. That was the place we vacationed a few times in the past and really liked it. That's a tough place to get into. The inventory is low. It's not real large. So I did kind of expand and just started taking a lot of trips, hanging out there on weekends, figuring out, you know, what makes sense, what it looks like, and learning the different communities. You know, like you said, there's tons of different communities all around. And, you know, I'm looking at houses everywhere, right? The Zillow's pinging every day of this thing popping up, that thing popping up. And so kind of figuring out the nuances of each little area was a fun process and seeing what's out there. So I was open to everything. I had kind of an ideal and that shifted, you know, as the market and different houses came up. But yeah, started in Lake Harmony, went down to Tomansing Trails, which is right below that. And I looked a little bit north in some of those other places. I decided I wanted to stay away from gated communities. My realtor, Jacob McLaughlin, he was great and very in tune with the short-term rental aspects and, you know, had a lot of knowledge and experience with kind of some of those hardships, particularly with some of the gated communities. So my thing was just make it easy to get to and just, you know, something is just, you can have a warm, inviting, welcoming to, you know, not dealing with a front end of front desk bear that you got to get to and access and get a code and all that stuff. So yeah, it was wide ranging. I mean, I started really hot and heavy in the beginning of summer and found a place in Lake Harmony that we absolutely loved. And that's how I found my realtor, actually. He was the listing agent, and I was just early in the process, so I wasn't with an agent, and I like to just call direct and do things myself. So I just showed up there, no realtor, and started talking to him, and ended up putting an offer in, and didn't lose it. They just took it off the market and said, "I'm not selling."
So, it was that type of an offer. You just scared them off completely, right?
They were just done. So that was the first one in maybe July or so. And, you know, went through a half a dozen of other offers and things throughout the rest of the year, narrowing it down. So again, I to answer your question directly, I had a few hot spots that I was looking at, but I was keeping an eye on the whole market, everything from the very western side of Jersey or eastern side of PA, along the river there, to, you know, a little bit further past Lake Harmony.
Yeah. And I always say sometimes that's hard if you don't know the market very well, but like you learn the different, like the sub markets, the different neighborhoods, different communities within the market, you start to really refine that buy box. Because like you were saying earlier, your phone's pinging on Zillow every single time something comes around. The larger the market, the more homes you're seeing, right? But they all have their little nuances depending on where they're at. And you start to navigate that and understand those markets, but even what's available in them, even the differences in price points, because you might be, you know, looking at multiple different neighborhoods and there's massive difference in prices, and you start to learn that as you start to navigate that. And as you start to learn it, you get that kind of that education on the market. It starts to make it easier to recognize the opportunities as well. Like I always say, sometimes when you're very first into a market, you're not even recognizing the good deals, right? But the longer you're in it, looking at an area, looking at properties, looking at inventory, you start to really recognize good deals, because they don't always just show up like they're a good deal. And your property that you ultimately landed on has some unique features, but it might not have been like, and it's a larger property, some acreage, all that stuff. And you started to realize there's some opportunity here. I'm curious if you feel like you would have recognized that as an opportunity if you saw the very first property.
You're absolutely right. I mean, it just takes time, and you, there's no way to do it other than just spending the time in it, whether, you know, and it's got to be all aspects of it, right? You're looking at listings, you're looking at prices, you're looking at recently sold, you're looking at Airbnb, you're looking at AirDNA, you're actually going there, you're going to the restaurants, you're seeing how far it is to get to a grocery store, you know, seeing what the local coffee shop's like, kind of seeing what the people are like, right? These are all things, you know, ultimately your guests are going to do and want to do. So, you know, it was a local market for me, but I learned just so much in just going there and spending the time figuring it out. And then, yeah, you really start to dial in the numbers, and right away you can see something pop up. It looks great. And then you kind of look in the map and you're like, oh, that's over there. I'm not even spending my time running a number on it. And vice versa. So yeah, you can kind of define that buy box a little bit based on what you learned from that experience. And also, you know, what you can afford and what's available as well, for sure. And in my property there, it ended up, you know, it is something that it was not in my buy box. We'll say that. You know, I wanted a lake house, something on a lake, near a lake, in a community, or some sort of like secluded mountain type escape, something with the view. And ultimately what we settled on was not quite that. You know, we found this in a residential type area, but it was a commercial zoned property. So not a lake house, not a mountain house, kind of close to the action, very close to that. And there's just not a lot of inventory there. You know, the zoning is pretty restrictive in that little area, but the residential zoning basically prohibits short-term rentals. So finding a commercially zoned property was kind of a little bit of a unicorn in that area. And yeah, I wouldn't have known, basically got to the point where all these great things are around it that I like. This is in the middle of all that. It's not in those, but it's between everything. So I can kind of get everywhere. And that was really attractive once I saw that pop up.
When it did pop up, and it is out of the buy box, right? You said it doesn't have the views, wasn't on a lake, but it has some different characteristics that we're like, man, this could be pretty attractive. And you start to navigate away from that buy box. Sometimes I always say, hey, listen, our buy box needs to be our North Star, kind of our guiding light. And we need to select that. But when you're dialed into a market, your buy box, because you've learned that market so well, will also, you'll recognize other opportunities where that opportunity of being in very much, at least in close proximity, a closed market, if you will, right? It's very restrictive to have residential zoning and do short-term rentals where you're at because you're right in the middle of the action. But with commercial zoning, you're like, maybe this works out as a very, you know, viable option. And it's pretty fun when you're dialed into a market well enough that you start to recognize that stuff.
That's exactly right. I mean, that's part of the learning curve of these little sub markets and sub communities too, is, you know, you get the pricing and the data and all that, but the restrictions, and not even the restrictions that are on the books now, but what is it moving towards? What does this town, you know, this town doesn't like Airbnbs. They're trying to make it more restrictive. These guys over here, they're great. They lean into it. They're up and coming. So there's a lot of that, that you kind of dial in as well. And I think for me, that was an interesting opportunity, especially in this location, because you kind of look at the surface and, you know, there's not a lot of inventory there. There's not a lot of revenue coming in right there. It's kind of on the border of a few things. Well, the reason of that is kind of the limited zoning ability to do a short-term rental, right? It wasn't that it's a bad market or a bad area. It's that it just, there's not a lot of inventory that will allow you to do what we want to do here.
Right. Was it already operational as a short-term rental, or was it just somebody's home?
Yeah. So, and if I could just jump back to kind of the refining of the buy box, you know, I started this off, and I'm a builder, right? That's kind of my background. And so I was really wanted a value add property, you know, something that kind of the ugly duckling on the street that I can really force appreciation on and build it what I want. But as I'm learning more, right, I'm defining buy boxes and also just kind of learning the process and what goes into it. You know, I joined Vodacy in the middle of all this and kind of dove into the lessons and all the lessons learned and the data. You know, you, when you start this process, I mean, it's probably the same for everybody. You don't really know what you need to spend and what things cost and what it takes to set up a successful property. So I found that, yeah, the value add just was going to be cost prohibitive for me, right? You got to buy all the furniture and the setup and then have renovations on top of that. It was limited. So I wanted to finance as much as I possibly could so that I could have the money on the back end to set it up right and do what I wanted to do. So, you know, this property was on the market for actually about a year and a half. It went away for a few months and it came back with like a $150,000 price drop. And it was like right before Thanksgiving. So, I think it was the Sunday before Thanksgiving. So Monday came, I think my son was off of school or he was sick and I grabbed him in the car. I was like, we're going to see this property. So we went up, we walked it and, loved it right away. It was expensive. It was higher than my original budget I had set out. But we walked it. It was a great house. It was performing as a short-term rental. Had pretty good data on it, and the sellers started giving us verbally some really good numbers, kind of even above what I was seeing with my own eyes, scraping through the data. So kind of walked in, and it's like, this thing's turnkey, man. This thing could just go. And walking the rest of the property was, you know, the mind started ticking of what else I could do there. So really what the initial draw for me was, okay, this thing is turnkey as it is, performs pretty well now. So I get that world, but also I have all this value add opportunity in this raw land that I could do some things with. And, you know, that's my long-term value add thing. So while it didn't, the geographic didn't hit my buy box, that piece of it in my mindset was like, oh, this is the one. I gotta go after this one.
Yeah, it's awesome. I love that you brought that up. One, I'm gonna backtrack to something you started off with saying is, you don't realize how much money goes into the back end of these properties and the requirements of it. And to your point, when you add all the furnishings and setup cost on top of a rehab or a value add type of a property, they can work out great, but there's a lot of capital that you're putting up front, right? You might put 10% down, but you might have 3 or 4 times that on the back end. And all of a sudden it's like, man, can we do all this stuff? And it is, I love value add properties. You got kind of got the best of both worlds where you could phase into with that, the land that you were able to pick up with it. It's like, hey, listen, the property itself, I don't have to do a lot of value add to the property. I can hit the ground running. It's turnkey. I can start getting some revenue coming in, and then I can phase into a value add where a lot of times, a lot of value add properties, you know this, being in the business you're in, we don't have the luxury of waiting. Sometimes we just have to do it, right? They're deferred maintenance properties. They're out of date. They need the updating. This is a really nice situation where you can phase into that value add when the time is right, which makes it a lot of fun.
That's right. I mean, I kind of learned you really have two different budgets. I mean, if you're looking at both these turnkeys and kind of rehab properties, I mean, you have two totally different purchase price budgets, right? Turnkey property, you can finance everything in there, right? And set it up with minimal cost and kind of get it moving. So the bank is paying for 80% of your stuff or whatever your financing terms are, where the value add, they're only paying 80% of your purchase price, and then the rest of it, essentially, you got to come up with it. So wide range of prices there. And so, I'm talking to some of the people, they're like, I don't understand. You're looking at this property one day, that property the other day. Like, it seems kind of random. I'm like, looking for a good opportunity here.
Yeah. And it does kind of sometimes seem random. Somebody was having a conversation before we jumped on the podcast with somebody, and they were like, okay, I've got X amount of money. How much property should I buy? And I'm like, there's a lot of, it depends, right? I mean, if it's turnkey, we're buying this much. If it's not, we're buying this much, right? Our budget sometimes cuts in half if it's not turnkey, right? And it's a massive difference based on the capital you have available of what types of properties you're going and looking at. And you can look at different types. You just have to know that, I might be qualified for $1 million property, and I can get the financing for $1 million property, and I have the down payment for $1 million property. But if it's not turnkey, I don't have the finance, or I don't have the budget in the bank, the cash available to bring it up to speed. And or if it's a value add, I might be looking at a $500,000 property to bring it up to speed, right? And so based on my capital available. And so it is a wide range. I'm really glad you brought that up, because it's like, why would you look at $500,000 properties up to $1 million properties? It doesn't make any sense, right? Well, it does when you understand on a value add, the capital available needed on the back end to bring these properties to life. Now, you can walk into instant equity, which is nice, right? But it's a lot more money on the front end, and I'm buying less of a property.
Yeah, totally. Totally. So yeah, we got into this one, and I made the offer that week right before Thanksgiving, and there was one other offer on the property. So I think I came up and just full asking price, closing 30 days. I was doing a debt service coverage ratio loan. So that was my financing product, 80% on that. And they went with my number, or my offer. We did the inspection. Inspection didn't turn up anything that concerned me, and kind of continuing down the due diligence path. And I started learning a lot more good things about the property. I found development plans for the rest of the 10 acres. It's a 10 and a half acre property. I don't think we said that. So 10 and a half acres, it's an existing house on the front end of it. So that takes up about an acre and a half. So there's about 8.5 acres on this thing. It kind of rises up an incline, looks west into the sunset. Really cool property. So there was development plans. The town had approved it a few years before that. So I talked to the engineers that did that plan. I started learning more about the town. It seemed the town was making the area more walkable and investing in, some of the infrastructure of the town. And so just kind of all signs that everything's kind of on the up and up in that area. And really the more I'm learning, the more I'm just like, this is great. I'm all in on this thing, and just started loving it more and more. As we get to it. So we're supposed to close right before Christmas, and there was a bunch of holiday bookings lined up, and I was really looking forward to that. I was going to get paid, the first few weeks, having a couple of nice bookings coming in. But we started getting appraisal issues. So one big thing I learned there, I loved the commercial aspect of it, provided a lot of flexibility with what I could do there, and loved it. the banks and the DSCR products, the loan products, they don't feel the same way. They they have a very small, it's not a buy box, loan box, whatever you want to call it. It's very small and they don't stray from it. So the appraisals were tough and ultimately didn't pan out. We went through a few that just canceled once they learned it was commercial. Some of them couldn't do it because it was commercial zoned, even though we were underwriting this just as a regular residential house. You know, it wasn't a commercial business necessarily. It just zoned that way. But it didn't matter for them, you know. Also the 10 and a half acres was a problem for zoning. There's a 10 acre cap on a lot of loan products. So I was getting variances on some of these loan products.
All things that we like as an investor, you're getting hit for on the back end with the financing. Yeah.
It made no sense to me. I did not understand it. But that's just part of the process and part of learning. So, we ultimately got a bad appraisal. They appraised properties that were not even short-term rentals, straight residences that weren't in areas that could even be short-term rentals. And so I really discounted that. But I was stuck, and it was after New Year. We waited all this time, 8 weeks or so, and I'm stuck and the deal feels like it's falling through, and ended up talking to the seller kind of one last time. And they floated the idea of seller financing this thing for us. And I loved it. I was all in on the property regardless. So we were over the next week and a half, they were under the gun. They needed to get this thing moved. And I was the only one there with at least a down payment ready to go. And, work through the seller financing product. They weren't familiar with it. They didn't know what they were doing. I didn't know what I was doing. But you know, I've obviously heard of it. It's not magic. It's really just an agreement. So, it was great, man. We figured it out. Me and my attorney. We drafted the contracts, the notes, the mortgage, all that stuff, and really just kind of hammered it through. Going back and forth, and you know, they were kind of getting nervous and cold feet, and going revisions back and forth, and kept extending the closing date, and finally got the last closing date. I think it was January 16th, and called my realtor. I was like, "What's up? We're still going back and forth with revisions. Like, are we closing today?" He's like, "Just come out here. Let's do it." So we go out to the property. We do our kind of pre-closing inspection, make sure everything's straight. And we still don't have even a verbal agreement on this mortgage and the sales agreement and everything. And we're just at the house. We're like, what do you need? Let's go. And we're just pushing. And so finally we spent all day there and we closed the title office at, I don't know, 6 PM or something like that. We just pushed everything through and we closed. And at that moment I had tenants in, we had renters that weekend. So I had the sellers manage it for me and I instantly was getting revenue the second I closed. It was awesome.
That is awesome. So you were you like, and you mentioned you started that process in 2024. It was 2025 and
I'm sorry, like, 25. Yeah. I'm sorry, 25. Yeah.
I remember you and I having a lot of these conversations. I'm like, I don't think that was I think that we were 2025 and then into 2026 when we closed it, right? So yeah, so you, right. What that's about right. What about missing that time? Was there anything as far as taxes that made a big difference for you, that it was this year's on 2026's taxes instead of 2025's? Was that something that you were concerned about?
It wasn't a major concern. I wasn't banking on it, but it was out there. And, you know, I was thinking if I close in December, that's a, you know, December 20th, if I close that, A, I'm getting revenue. B, that's an easy one to be material participation. You know, I got to deal with like 2 or 3 weeks on it. And so, you know, that was part of the googly eye and I love this thing. Let's go, whatever it takes. So that falling through, that did hurt. You know, I think there was $18,000 worth of bookings over that holiday period, that I missed out on. So missed the taxes. So that really stung. I did not love that.
And you'll obviously it's going to be available for you this year if you decide to do that and want to run down that road, right?
Because yeah, we're going for that. Yeah.
It's under this year's, you know, the taxes and the acquisition side. So, you missed out on some of that revenue, but the minute you closed, we got, so it went all the way from I got the loan product, I'm qualified, everything else. They don't like the land, the 10 acres, 10 and a half acres. They have a cap there. They don't like commercial, all things that we like on the deal. Finally, we get the deal done with seller financing. And if I remember, your terms are pretty nice with the seller. Like it was, seemed like it worked out really well with the seller financing option. And so do you have, I don't remember, and I know you've told me this before, but I actually don't remember. Do you have a balloon payment on it? Like how did the rough terms of your seller financing for those people listening?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, initially, again, it was open to renegotiation, right? So I had the market of what I was getting for a DSCR product, traditional product. I knew what those were. And so kind of we're back to the negotiating table. And ultimately got an interest rate slightly below market at the time. I think I'm 6.5, which in hindsight, I thought it was going to keep coming down. In hindsight, it didn't. It kind of stayed there and even went back up a little bit. So pretty good interest rate. And yes, I do have a balloon payment after it's like a 10-year max. And then there's some triggers in there at like years 4 and 8 to kind of incentivize me to refinance and get out. So that definitely is the strategy. You know, it was kind of a bailout, but on both of our parts, I wanted the property, they wanted it sold. We made it work. Now I'm incentivized to get this thing stabilized, maximized, and refinanced, so I can get clear of that and get a new one. So
love it. And you're not a little bit under the gun. It's not like you did a year long, or a 2 year or something like that. You got plenty of time to get that done.
For sure. Yeah, for sure. You know, and it's untraditional, and at some level, some people look at it like that's very risky, or introduces more risk or whatever. But you know, I looked at it, and at the end of the day, in real estate, you're looking 10 years ahead. I mean, things, especially in a good market, you're confident in. I mean, it was still a no brainer.
Yeah, I would agree as well. That doesn't seem risky at all to me, and I like that you're able to put the deal together, but it still works for everybody. I don't think you're biting off like putting your back against the wall, which is important when you start dealing with, you know, okay, I'm under the gun. This financing got pulled out from under us. We got to do something. You didn't walk into something that you just were like, let's get it closed and I'll figure it out later. Those are terms that we would negotiate and be really happy with regardless. And so that's awesome to be able to do that. So yeah. So you got it early, kind of mid-January, early in the year. Talk to me about the launch and how it's going. We're mid-year now, like kind of, it was a kind of a turnkey property. And so how is it going compared to what you were expecting and looking at moving forward?
Yeah, close to turnkey. You know, that's always a relative term, especially on, in our world where we're trying to operate on the higher end of markets. We had that first tenant in there the weekend that went okay. And then we kind of closed it up after that. And we went in and there's a little bit of deferred maintenance on some things that we had to take care of. And we replaced all of the soft goods, you know, bed covers, pillows, all that stuff, re-inventoried the whole property, you know, got some kind of accent pillows going in. So really just did kind of the bare necessities to make a very comfortable stay for the guests. You know, still, it's a 7-bedroom property, about 4,500 square feet, so large property. So again, I mean, that's a lot of volume of pillows and blankets and comforters you got to buy. So there's a lot of stuff. Replaced all the kitchen goods in there. So we did that, and I say we. I'll shout out my property managers, Jeff and Christine from East Coast Escapes. I say we, but it was really them. I mean, I was just sitting there approving it. They took a lot of the lead there and did an amazing job turning it from what it was to what it is now. Just making it very comfortable, getting rid of the plaid sheets and the nasty pillows and everything, and setting it up right so it looks professional and very clean. So we did that. That took about 2.5 weeks. Cleaned some things up, did the maintenance, and we relaunched with our listing the first week of February. I think it's February 5th we launched. And February was great. We had some leftover bookings, some new bookings, but we were booked solid in February. Pretty decent in March, considering that is the slowest season in that market. March is pretty drab, but we did okay. And then April was booked solid, and May was booked solid. So I was really happy with the launch phase, you know, coming out with aggressive pricing and just getting people in the door, getting the reviews up and getting it stabilized. We hit the ground pretty hot. You know, I got a hold of the seller's photos that they had. They were pretty good. And we launched with those. We've since taken our own photos after we updated some of the color pops and blankets and accents and all that stuff. So we've done our own photos now, but we launched as soon as we could with what we had and made it work. And it did well.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's awesome. And I love that you mentioned the property manager in there and during that setup phase and helping you through that. And you know, it's always, there's like, you know, because we talk about this at Vodacy all the time, I always say that the property managers are, they're not all created equal. In fact, I was talking to one earlier today and they were saying, well, I want to get paid for, you know, helping you set this up and helping with this and helping with that. And I'm like, man, that's what our property managers in a lot of these good markets, they help us with that stuff, right? You're going to get all this business. You're going to be managing this property. It's in your best interest to help get it set up correctly. And so it's awesome when you have a good property manager that really understands and they become a partner on the front end. They know they're going to get the business on the back end, but they're not saying they're sitting there saying, hey, I'm going to, and I'm perfectly fine paying property managers for certain things if they're going out and doing certain things outside of it. But a lot of times, like what you mentioned, they manage getting the right stuff in there and getting it received and helping you get it set up or even just opening doors for other contractors coming in. And it sounds like your property manager has become a really good partner in that area, which is really, really important.
Yeah, I mentioned that earlier. I went into this planning to self-manage and planned out for a long time. And I was like, you know what, let me talk to some of these folks. Let me learn. I can have a few conversations. So ended up interviewing, I don't know, a dozen or so property managers and kind of going through our Vodacy process and our Vodacy questionnaire and diving into what this is. A lot of good ones, man. If I had known better and learned the things I did through this group and this program, you know, I don't know who I would have ended up with because they all sound great and probably a lot of them are great. But you know, having kind of that structure and knowing where to needle and pick things out. I mean, there's no doubt I picked the best one. I've been really happy with it so far. And you know, it's totally been able to shift my mindset from, you know, things I'd have to do self-managing to, you know, things I'm better at, quite frankly, being a builder, thinking about what I can do with the property. How can I maximize it? How can I just create a really good experience and let them execute it? How can I set it up and kind of let them execute it? And I quickly fell in line to your line of thinking of property manager is the best partner to have. Outsource it. Let them do their job. Let them do what they do great and stick to what you're good at.
That's awesome. Yeah. And so speaking of what you're good at, is like, what is like, do you have immediate plans for some of the, you know, future development of the land? Like what's the plans for what you're like, is there phases to it? Or do we have something like right on are we going to see how things go first before we start doing a whole bunch of stuff? Like what are the future plans for the property? Is it?
Yeah. So I just finished actually a full design with Mike. Mike at Vodacy Design. So we went over the whiteboard, I think a week or two ago, and they're putting the final touches on that to send it over. So I went the DIY route because, as you mentioned before, I kind of got to stage it here. So I think the best value I have, I really got to maximize what I got now here. You know, so if I had all the money in the world, I'd go start building more Airbnbs and more short-term rental units on this property. And
is that what your plan is for the future, is to actually put more ADU, like more units on the property itself?
Yeah. 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 I think ultimately that's the move. How many, what unit mix, we'll have to figure that out. But you know, it can fit 9 3,000, 4,000 square foot homes on it. That's what the plans had it before. You know, I see something more of a little more of a unique kind of micro resort type community with some really cool central features and kind of central amenities that the community can use. So that's ultimately the plan. Get some really cool, interesting buildings in there, some nice A-frames or, you know, kind of some container homes, things that are just unique and interesting and not offered typically in the Poconos, or something with things that we don't have yet there. So that's the ultimate goal. And I'll kind of continue to plug away with that, with some of the infrastructure, needs that we need there and estimating. And I think ultimately that will work into my future refinancing. It'll be some sort of, you know, all-inclusive package where I'm selling the vision of this thing and getting a finance partner that can help me fund it in different vehicles, whatever that may be. So it's definitely an integral part of what I have now. But in the near term, I want to maximize this thing. So there's a couple, you know, it's a great house, but it's definitely more model home than it is a unique experience. So I got to start bringing in some of those unique experiences and making this thing pop and stand out from the market a little bit. I'm going to start with the basement. Right now it's just a lot of amenities down there and just kind of a bland drab basement. So we got some cool plans coming to really make that a unique space that something people haven't really seen before. So we're going to do that. And then on the outside, you know, there's a lot of opportunity to just do some kind of quick, easy things, that I'm exploring there. So, you know, some sports courts, things like that, nature trails I can do there. You know, I'd love to build like a little mini golf course, maybe a big putting green like a real green that we can play a little golf on. Disc golf, I think there's a cool opportunity for. So I think some of these kind of quick amenities, I want to get as many as I can in this year as quickly as possible and start marketing them just to help build this and maximize what I got. But I'm really trying to develop at least a framework plan for the whole property in itself. That way I'm not just throwing things in to stick. I can kind of start it knowing what I'm going to build around it,
right,
and phase that whole thing.
So, like, some of these things will be shared amenities ultimately with the rest of the houses, like that go around it.
That's right.
Yeah. Awesome.
That's right.
I love it.
Yeah, that's right.
And I love that you mentioned maximize what we have first. It's something I talk to investors about all the time is, listen, let's take what we have. Let's make sure we maximize what we have before we move on to the next project, go buy the next property, whatever it is. I know this one is unique because you're going to be adding multiple units to the same property, but you still want to maximize what you have. And I love that you're taking that step, because I always find that when you do that, your ultimate return is so much higher by maximizing before we start moving on to something different.
Yeah. I mean, you think you definitely have to. You can't really... You definitely can't sit on what you've done. I mean, we hit the ground running and have done really well. We've brought in a lot of revenue. I was just looking at my May statement, and we did, before the Airbnb fees, we did over 20,000 in May, which is humongous. And I never thought I'd have a property that was doing that. Now at the same time, you know, that money's gone already. You know, the net that we're bringing in, it's a big house, a big property. We got a lot of bills, a lot of turnover, a lot of cleaning, things like that. So, you know, you can't just be happy with bringing in some good numbers. There's more houses coming in the area, right? We got to compete with other properties there. I don't have a pool in the property, right? A lot of these other high-end properties have a pool or some sort of water feature here. So I'm kind of competing against that. But I just got to bring something different, because I don't have a pool and I don't have 150 grand to throw a pool in real quick and, you know, bring that in. So you gotta figure out what your market is here and maximize what you got first.
Love it. Yep. I totally agree. So awesome, Mason. This has been a great conversation. Before we wrap up though, I always put you on the spot, put you on the hot seat, going through the process, learning what you've learned, all the things going forward. Like, what would you tell your younger self or somebody that's listening to this? That's, you know, that you're like, you know, we mentioned a few things along the way, but is there something that stands out as like a piece of advice for somebody that's thinking about it? Maybe they're in the middle of it. Maybe they're just, you know, just getting started. And like, what would that be if you wanted to give your younger self some advice?
I think all the lessons learned and a lot of what we do and a lot of the success I've had in life, before this, during this, after this, surround yourself with good people and just do it. I mean, just move forward. Take a step, do something. You're going to be nervous because you don't know it. You haven't done this before. You feel like you're the only one. You don't know how you do it. You feel like you don't have the right partner. I mean, especially in the day and age we live in now, we have access to unlimited amount of resources and knowledge. There is nothing that you can't figure out and just do. So, I mean, just take action one step at a time. Keep moving forward. Push through that discomfort. Get out of your comfort zone and just do it.
Love it. Love it. And, you know, it's funny every time, like we do customer surveys every once in a while at Vodacy and just get a feel for where people feel like they're getting value, where they're getting a return on that investment. And every single time we've ever done a survey, the number one thing people get the best return on is the community. And that is just surrounding yourself with really good people doing this, understanding that there's not a perfect process, that there's not a lack of information either. And there's never a lack of people that have already run down this road. Today's day and age, there's the information and processes and everything else. It's there for you, but it's also important to be around other people doing it and that can support you along the way and can root you on. And, you know, when you're having the bad day, they pat you on the back. And when you're having a good day, sometimes you're pulling them along as well. And so just being a part of a really good community of people that are doing this makes a big difference, and it gives us that confidence to move forward, because sometimes you do feel like you're on an island by yourself. Sometimes you feel like you're the only one that had a problem, right? And when you're around other people that are doing it, you realize, no, I'm not. I'm actually not the only one that's had this problem, and people have worked through it before me, and they're going to work through it after me. And so I might as well work through it right now, right? And so it's always, you know, take that first step, take the action, and don't look back, right? And so I appreciate that advice. Those of you that are listening to us, one, Mason, I appreciate your time joining, letting people that are listening to us listen in on this conversation. Always our goal is to help you guys walk into this game with your eyes wide open. That's why we have these conversations you can listen in on. You know that I put these properties in the show notes. This is going to be a fun one to go look at updates on, because the property as it is now, Mason's right in the middle of maximizing this. Going to have a different design. Some things are going to change. So go look at it in the next month or two and kind of watch this property kind of evolve. And then also, as we start to add different properties, check it out. Success leaves clues. And that's why we post this stuff. That's why we have these conversations for you guys to learn from them. I know I learn from every single one of these conversations, and it's always very fun for me to listen and have these conversations. Those of you that are listening, you know I don't run a bunch of ads or sponsorships. You didn't have to get interrupted in this conversation with a whole bunch of people telling you what to buy and what to do. The only way the show grows, though, because we don't do that, is if you guys share it. And so if you have more than 30 seconds, like it or review it on whatever platform you're watching or listening on. And before we wrap up, the most important thing I ask you at the end of every episode, pick that one thing you can do today, start building that life you don't want to take a vacation from. Cheers, my friends.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. Share this with other people you think need to hear about it. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. Hey Grace, is there a website? Yes! For more amazing content and expert advice, visit Vodacy.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.